everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat, and along with me, but he's not in this particular studio, he's on the other side of the glass, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program. We're off and running on, we're ready to transition into June. It's Friday, May 31st, 2024, the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, and we're now... We have five radio stations here under one roof as the Bustos Media presence continues to grow in Tucson, our latest acquisition, the very popular radio station, The Drive. But this one's KVOI 1030 The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk. We're in our 14th year now, 13 and a half years with the radio program, our 36th year in the biz in Tucson. We have our worldwide live listening and all of our podcasts going back to January of 2011, conveniently archived at buckmastershow.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews, and we do invite calls, 790-2040. The live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. A couple of our media partners want to acknowledge TucsonSentinel.com and the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Our Friday Focus interview today with Tucson City Manager. Well, he's the assistant city manager for maybe one more week, to be perfectly accurate, right, Tim Tamir?
That's correct, Bill. Okay. I've got another week left the chair I'm in, and then I'll be the city manager for better or worse at that point.
There you go. The city manager, Tim coming into that position because the city council unanimously selected him in March to manage the city's $2+ billion budget and 4,500 employees. When city manager Mike Ortega announced his retirement, Mike steps aside officially at the end of next week. Tim has been a part of Mr. Ortega's team for years. He became director of Tucson Water in 2016, and after 5 years there, served in the city manager's office as assistant and then deputy director. Joining me, our guest media co-host. On Friday, we like to bring in one of my media friends, and today it is Kurt Prendergast, co-founder of Tucson Agenda, a journalist-owned, subscriber-based online newsletter that is, it's a daily, Monday through Friday, it's a daily weekday mix of original reporting and a roundup of the best local news from other Southern Arizona outlets. Kurt, great to see you.
All right, thanks for having me.
So, Tim, the transition, how's that going to work? I mean, you're obviously, you know the city. This should be, I don't want to say fairly easy, but let's say it's a fast track with hopefully not many obstacles.
I think that's fairly accurate. There's going to be high expectations early because I have had some significant time with the city. But I'm realistic enough to know that there's a lot I don't know about that actual role and the things that Mr. Ortega's handled flawlessly over 9 years. I don't think overnight we'll flip a switch and I'll be right at that level. But I've done a lot to be prepared, and Mr. Ortega's given me great opportunities to be prepared. And having the full support of the council is critical toward getting off to a good start.
What's the cabinet? How many departments do you kind of oversee? Not kinda, that you do oversee.
Right. Yeah. There are 17 departments of the city, ranging from internal services like finance and HR and IT to the public works departments that most people interact with on a daily basis, with the transportation, water, your trash and garbage. And then we have, of course, the public safety, police, fire, 911, courts. We offer quite a variety of services, and we have a great team of folks out there delivering.
Here's Kurt.
Yeah, I'm curious. You're taking on a new role. Is there any specific challenge that you see that you're thinking, oh, man, that's going to need a lot of attention?
Well, and I know you're going to go there anyway. It is the budget and finances of the city. The city of Tucson is in a great financial position relative to many of our peers. But it as always, those are things that need constant care and attention, and you need to always be making good recommendations to the mayor and council to have the long-term financial health in mind. We're in the process of final adoption of a budget for next fiscal year, which is a balanced budget, and that's the best news part of it. The downside of that is state shared revenues are going down significantly next year again.
What percentage down do you think?
We're as a percentage, I'm not sure, but we're going to be down another about $20 million of because of the state flat tax that was adopted a few years ago. And so that's our challenge for next year is how do we, through no doing of the city or the mayor and council, we've been doing great money management, and then you have a reduction in your revenues from the state because of decisions made up in Maricopa. And so our job is to make those adjustments and bring in another balanced budget.
And we don't know what the state budget is at this point.
That's the mystery. we might know next week. We might not know till the end of the month. But we know that they have a significant deficit, and we know that things will be fundamentally different. We're not sure how that affects cities yet, except we're not expecting anything on the positive side for cities to come out of Maricopa.
When I see a headline that says $2.3 billion budget with a spending cap for the next fiscal year, what's the spending cap?
So one of the first actions a mayor and council does is adopt the total spending cap for the organization for the following year. That's based on a pretty well fleshed out full budget of all the different things that would be done. But when they adopt that cap, they really just set a limit for spending. And then when they do final budget adoption, it has all the detail in it. So there still could be things that are tweaked between now and next week. But really, that's the full force of investment that's going to come from the city.
Okay, Kurt.
Yeah, I'm curious. You know, with this year's budget, were there any big shifts in money moving from one department to the other, anything like that?
Some of the bigger shifts we had is we had to absorb the first impact of the state shared the state flat tax. So we didn't have as much additional revenue year over year. You generally have some growth and you have some additional revenue. We didn't have as much of that. So what we did was really address some of the critical needs. And it's really core investment. We did address some additional funding for police and fire overtime. It doesn't sound like much, but there's a lot of overtime in those departments. And having the financial capacity to do that is important. We're investing in our parks and aquatics, despite some of the recent talk about our pool hours.
Yeah, there's a lot of negative publicity on the dust up about cutting back pools. People did not want to hear that, especially as we launch into our summertime here.
Yeah. Timing is everything, and how we communicate is another thing. And we did neither of those well. And we can talk more about that.
Yeah.
But also in our general facilities, we just have a lot of aging infrastructure in the city, and we need to keep really moving the investments in those facilities forward so that it can continue to serve the constituents.
You want to follow up now on the pool thing?
Right. So on the pools thing, we actually did ourselves a disservice by over-delivering last year, and I'll explain what I mean by that. We actually pumped a lot of additional resource and effort into our aquatics and opened more pools than we had in a number of years for more hours. We hired more lifeguards. But we did that without fully understanding the budget impact of that. So while we had more budget last year than the year before, we actually overspent it significantly in delivering what we did. So going into this summer, we had added additional budget to the aquatics, but we also said, try to bring it in closer to actually on budget. That conversation of that, even though we were going to be open less hours, we're actually allocating more resource to it. We didn't really communicate that well with council. They really didn't understand that even though we were putting more money in than the previous year's budget, it was going to result in fewer hours. And so that was just a really bad misstep on our end. And we own that, and we're working through that to try to bring additional funding to the table to have more hours than what we originally planned. But also hidden in that is that even though the number of hours went down, the offices, the services we were offering at the pools did go up. The amount of learn to swim programming we did went up significantly in what we programmed, but that was not the focal area. That's not what we communicated well. It was really, you have fewer hours, And we don't like that. And I don't blame the customer for thinking that just because of how we handled the communication.
Mm-hmm. Kurt? Mm-hmm.
I have another budget question. I'm curious, you know, for the general public, you know, you hear about all the money coming into the city. Could you kind of tell us, like, what are the big pots of money that the city has to use?
That's a great question. So we do get a significant amount of money from the state of Arizona through the state sales effort. All our sales taxes are collected and they are processed through the state and they come back to the city. We do get state shared revenues in the form of the highway user revenue funds. So the state is one big share of money. We do have some local, a minor local property tax that the city gets. It's not a big part of our portfolio, but it's important. We also have local sales tax elections that we've had still collected by the state and brought back to the city. But we have Prop 411, where we said we're going to improve every road in Tucson in the next 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So those are revenue sources. We also have revenues from the federal government, a lot in the housing and in the public safety space. And then we've been really effective over the last couple of years of tapping into the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act. There's competitive grant programs that we've gone after tens of millions of dollars. And I checked, I think we've brought in about $200 million in the last 2 years of additional federal funds through competitive grants. So there's a rich mix of revenue sources. And then, of course, I should mention that we run utilities, so we get services fees for Tucson Water, for the garbage service we provide. People pay user fees for parks. So there's just, you know, dozens of revenue sources that come in.
Here's a listener question coming in on my Facebook. Does Tucson really have enough water, Tim, for 100 years, especially after Southern California starts taking all its allotted CAP water? And it's a two-part question. Should Tucson really be focusing on growth in a desert environment? Two parts.
So the first question is probably the most common question I get. And my answer is going to be yes, and it's an unequivocal yes on do we have enough water for the next 100 years. And if we had an hour, I could step you through all the reasons I can assert toward that. But what I'll summarize it with, first of all, the Tucson over the last 50 years now has done a great job of diversifying its water portfolio. We used to be solely reliant on groundwater. That was not sustainable. So if we didn't do that, where we diversified our water, the answer to the question would be no. But the answer is yes, because we've added the recycled water system in the mid-80s, which where we take locally generated effluent and we recycle it for golf courses and other uses. We do import the Colorado River water, which, yes, is in a shortage now. However, where we are positioned as Tucson is we're amongst the highest priority of the low-priority folks. That sounds like an oxymoron, but in water world, those words have meaning. In that we've done voluntary actions to reduce our water usage. We've not been compelled to do it because we've positioned ourselves to be very robust on our access to that water. And because the diversification of water and then the conservation done by Tucsonans. That's not done by the city. That's not done by Tucson Water. That's done by Tucsonans. We help. We've brought down our total water use from its peak around 2004 by, I think, about 40% of total water use, even though we've grown through that period. So we're actually living within our means in Tucson. We know those means are going to be challenged with climate change and shortages on the Colorado River. We continue to take steps to be resilient and robust.
Second part of the question, growth.
Growth of the Tucson is essential to us improving the standard of living in Tucson. We've done a lot in the last few years to improve the standard of living in Tucson. Wages have gone up, poverty rates have gone down, but we're not nowhere near where Tucson could be as far as having people having not living at the poverty level or below and having great careers that they can do here. We've made movement, I think, through that growth. The economic development growth, but also the growth of the community, we can continue to raise the standard of living in Tucson, and we do have the water to make that real.
Kurt, did you have a question about snowpack?
Oh, yeah. So I've been seeing in the news, it's something, the snowpack apparently is good up in the Rockies, and I was just wondering, yeah, what does that mean for us?
So snowpack in the Rockies matters to us because that's what turns into the amount of water in Lake Mead and the Colorado River that comes to all the states. So when we have a good year, that just means we're not going to lose ground from where we are. Because if you've driven over near Lake Mead or over Hoover Dam or near it, you can see how far down that lake is. And Lake Powell to the north is the same condition. So we don't have a lot of Colorado River water in storage on the river system as we've had in the past. That snowpack is what would replenish that over time if you get excellent snowpack year after year. It is a good news story to just get okay snowpack, because that means we're not going to draw the reservoirs down further. Two winters ago, we had an excellent snow season. The reservoirs recovered because of that, but you would need a decade of that for to really have it get out of the danger zone. But having a good snowpack any winter you get, that's a win.
All right, we're up against the break, but before we take the break, because this is water related, when this news happened about these state grants to Tucson Water, you posted on Facebook, Tim, you were really excited about that. Bottom line, is this a big deal?
It's a very big deal. First of all, the state legislature put $200 million into programs for water conservation in the state. And that's unprecedented. The state had never taken that action before. Of that, City of Tucson had over $11 million of grants awarded to the city. And that's for turf removal. That's for smart meters, efficient fixtures in our housing stock. So a lot of different ways that water will be conserved. And I'd also mention that other communities like Marana, Oro Valley, local water companies outside of Tucson also received quite a bit of benefit from that.
All right. Kurt Prendergast is with me from Tucson Agenda. Tim Tomier is here. Tim is going to be officially city manager in the city of Tucson as of next Friday, when Mike Ortega has his going away party and a cake, I assume, and says goodbye, and he goes off and does other stuff. And he's probably got a lot of stuff, doesn't he? He likes to woodwork and all these other things.
Woodworking and time with the grandkids remain his number one and number two things, maybe tied.
All right, let's talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. As an added incentive, Kurt and Tim, they have a liquor license and they are utilizing it, so you can have a mimosa, orange juice and champagne with your breakfast, or a beer with your lunch. They're open right now for lunch. Tim?
That sounds like a great business decision.
We'll take a break right here. MonasDanishBakery.com is their website. They're open 6:30 in the morning, Tuesday through Sunday. More with Tim and Kurt right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Gee, the hour goes very fast. We're coming up almost to the midway point. Tim Tomier is here. Tim becomes the official city manager for the city of Tucson. Huge job, huge budget, what, over 2.3, I won't say over, I guess it's pretty much right at $2.3 billion and 4,500 approximately, depending on the day, I guess, employees in the city of Tucson. Kurt Prendergast is with us, and Kurt and Caitlin Schmidt doing such a great job as the co-founders. Their one-year anniversary is actually coming up for Tucson Agenda, and they've done well. They're almost up to 900 paid subscribers, which is pretty much on target, right, Kurt?
Well, yeah, we are. We're driving towards 900 paid subscribers. We're at like 730 or so.
Yeah, but you've certainly found a niche, and people like what you do, and we like what you do here at the Buckmaster Show, and you're back in the rotation for our Friday show. I mean, you were in the rotation when you were over at the Star as the opinion editor, and you and Caitlin are going to be frequent guests.
Oh, and I'm happy to be here. This is always a great conversation.
We're delighted to have you. And of course, we know Tim going all the way back to when he came to the city of Tucson to take over at Tucson Water. Want to begin with the transportation question about the RTA. City Manager Ortega, outgoing City Manager Mike Ortega, put out a memo. It was widely publicized about Tucson might be better funding its own long-term transportation projects rather than sticking with a regional group of governments that divvies up funding and schedules the work. A lot of people, I don't know if they misinterpreted this, but what's your thinking about RTA next?
There's a lot of layers to the conversation around regional transportation. The city of Tucson's still at the table, and in fact, there was a marathon meeting just yesterday about many of these issues. So first and foremost, the city of Tucson is laser focused on meeting the commitments to the voter in RTA first, you know, the RTA that we have now. And we're really making sure that all of those projects are delivered before we go back to the voter and say, please give us another 20 years as a region. We have to demonstrate that we've done well with the initial 20 years. And we have done well to a point. There is uncertainty about how we're going to finish delivering all of those projects. And until that's resolved, I think it's a little bit difficult to completely focus on RTA Next. But having said that, I'm convinced we'll get there. And so RTA Next really needs to have the right chemistry of investment for different transportation modes and the different needs of the different communities involved. Tucson's infrastructure has been around for a long time. Our voters are not interested in new major thoroughfares. They're interested in the network that we have being well-maintained, reconstructed when it needs to be. RTA 1 was more about new. It was about expansion. RTA Next needs to be more nimble than that, needs to be more nuanced than that. The suburban cities certainly have needs for expansion, but it's not a one-size-fits-all discussion as some people view it now as it was before. And that's where the struggle lies, is that, first of all, the city of Tucson voter is the voter that will carry an RTA Next conversation. There's no doubt about that. And so, therefore, the city of Tucson voter needs to get its reasonable, equitable share of the investment.
Yeah, they've got to be, the Tucson voters got to say, what's in it for me?
That's correct. And as the city and ultimately the mayor and council, we need to be able to say, this is good value for the cost of the half cent, you know, sales tax that you pay. And I say we're able to generally say that about RT1. And I think we're on a path to being able to say it without hesitation, but we're not quite there yet. And until we get the right chemistry agreed to by all the regional partners, we're not at a position to say that for RTA Next yet.
All right, Kurt Prendergast, mm-hmm. what do you have in your stack of stuff? And you've got as large a stack of stuff of questions for Tim as I do. Go ahead, Kurt.
Yeah, one thing I was curious about is a role that you had to step into, I think starting in January, December, was to be the liaison, the one who's keeping track of legislation. And we've had a lot of zoning laws that have come through, and it's kind of hard to keep track of. Could you make sense of that for us?
Sure. In its simplest level, anything around housing or density, zoning laws related to that, there's a lot of interest at the legislative level and elsewhere to make it easier and more timely to build housing. And I think it's true the city of Tucson shares that interest. And cities across the state. The challenge with legislature coming from the state is that it preempts local control. And so there's always an element of, we like what you think you're doing, we don't like the way that you're doing it. And so that's where the governor's been put in the position of having to veto certain bills or sign certain bills. They all have that balance of, are we getting a good outcome and what are we giving up to get it? So what makes Tucson unique in that is that we've already reformed so much of our local codes. We've got accessory dwelling units is a thing you can do in Tucson. We've done the hard work to make sure our zoning and our codes work for density and for housing. But to have something on top of that imposed is where we have a challenge, which is why sometimes like the Valley cities might be all against a bill. We're more neutral because we don't like the preemption, but we're already doing it. So that's really the chemistry there. I think it's one of the issues that is everybody working on it is very well-intentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, how do we go about getting to those outcomes? And the struggle between a local charter city and its control versus the state.
With those accessory dwelling units, the casitas, has anything changed with that? Is there any difference that we're going to see in Tucson?
First of all, in Tucson, we've not only created the pathway for people to do it, mm-hmm. we also had a design competition where there's now, you don't even have to design your own casita. There's about six of them that we just say, we had a design competition, the best ones were selected. And if you decide, I'm going to build that one, you can, and you meet all the requirements, you have enough space on your lot, you can build it. So you can get a very fast path to an ADU. If you want to do a specialty ADU that does all
ADU
accessory dwelling unit.
Go ahead.
A casita.
Okay.
So you have a path where you can save yourself a lot of money and time by saying, if you do one of these, you've mm-hmm. got a clear path.
Mm-hmm. But the state laws haven't changed our situation yet.
They're beginning to have that change. The recent bill that was signed, there is some things that are being imposed on cities. I think we have until January of 2025 to make some policy changes. And we're right now assessing exactly what are the actions the city needs to make. So the most recent bill that was passed, that was signed by the governor, does change things in Tucson. And we're ferreting that out right now.
Okay.
Rezoning question about the area near 6th Street and Tucson Boulevard. Developer Ross Rolney, who helped develop the
Benedictine.
Yes, thank you. Ross wants the village at Sam Hughes to have more flexible zoning and allow for a craft workspace, a bar, and a microbrewery. Some of the neighbors aren't all keen on that. What do you think?
So I believe there's a zoning examiner discussion on that, maybe even as early as next week. Mm-hmm. So I've worked with Ross before. He has really great intentions, and I think he's demonstrated the ability to do great projects. If you know the concerns around the Benedictine Sanctuary and what could or might happen to that, and the way he worked with the city and others to resolve that with a very profound project that really added a lot of housing, but preserved what's really cool about the sanctuary, I think is a testament to him. He didn't pay me to say that. having said that, I think there will always be multiple perspectives on any project that happens in the city. That particular corner with you know, Bob's Dob in the area and, you know, what used to be the Rincon Market, I think it already is a hub for people to do the types of things that he's proposing to do. Do you get saturation? I can't really speak to somebody's perspective of that, but I don't question the motives of doing something at that corner.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk public safety. There's so much concern. The Tucson Crime Free Coalition, very concerned that vandalism is out of control in the city. And just basically they worry about that the crime is really out of control. How do you see it right now? Is this a safe city?
Tucson is a safe city, and we've done a number of things to make it safer than it has been. We have a number of things that will make it even safer still. Having said that, violent crime trends are significantly down in the city of Tucson. So, and I think there's been a couple of op-eds in recent weeks that asserted certain things, and then another one that actually shared the facts. But the particular type of crime you're talking about, vandalism, probably loitering, the outdoor fentanyl use, we're seeing unprecedented levels of that. And that is something that we are really focused on. How do we address? How do we address these types of crimes that impact, you know, the victim of the people directly involved in the crime, but also impact all of us as we're driving around Tucson streets? And even if you're not likely to be the subject of a violent crime, you're impacted when you don't feel safe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that we're working closely with the county and the county attorney's office and police chief Kasmar on really the core issue to address is fentanyl. And we have an opioid settlement money IGA that's recently been enacted by the city and the county that provides resources. How do we, and it's not a TPD challenge, that's part of it, but it's community safety, health, and wellness. It's our community partners. It's the public health department. How do we address this particular drug and how people get addicted to it and ultimately the lethal doses that they're exposed to? But even more so, it's not the things we grew up with where there was a detox option that was viable. There are, it really is a very intensive process to detox somebody from fentanyl, and it's scary for the person. And so we need to have a different conversation about how, even when we find people who are willing, there are barriers to getting off of fentanyl. And we're identifying those and working very closely with Chair Grijalva and Mayor Romero on how does the city and the county work together on that. So while I'm not a big fan of the rhetoric of the Crime-Free Coalition by any means, I think Tucsonans are aware of the fact that there is a lot of this activity in Tucson that we need to address as a community.
All right. Tim Tomier is here and Kurt Prendergast from Tucson Agenda. Tom, on the other side of the glass, this is messages for you. Let's take a break now. And then what we'll do is we'll come back and we'll do segment three totally with Tim, because I've got Tim and Kurt. We've got more to talk about. And that will take us up to weekend watch break. The break with Dan Gibson. How does that sound, Tom? All right, so let's take the break. More with Tim and Kurt right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
All righty, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Since it's my show, I can be the quarterback and made a decision to keep Tom, you're over for segment number three. Kurt Prendergast is here from Tucson Agenda. And the Tucson Agenda, for folks that don't know, it's pretty easy, right, Kurt, to subscribe?
Oh, absolutely.
Tell our listeners about it.
Yeah, just go to TucsonAgenda.com and there's going to be a button and you click subscribe and it's free. And you'll start getting emails at 6 o'clock in the morning, Monday through Friday.
Yeah, and you're really regular about that. I know it's 6 o'clock because I'm up doing my now meditation, and after my 15-minute meditation, it's 6 o'clock. There's the Tucson Agenda.
And it's not like I'm up at 5:45 clicking a button. We can schedule it for 6 a.m.
Okay, Tim Tomier is here, soon to be the official city manager in the city of Tucson. And Tim, congratulations! You've worked so hard on your PhD program from the University of Arizona. Is it a school or college of geography?
It's the School of Department of Geography in the School of Geography Development and Natural Resources.
And what is the program that you are focusing on?
So my work centers on the Colorado River. I'm going back to my water roots on the work I do there. So I'm doing policy analysis of the drought contingency plans that have been adopted, really with an intent on the stakeholder interactions that allowed agreements to come together to hopefully emphasize the lessons learned from that could be applied for future water negotiations.
All right, let's go back to public safety. Tucson's several streets will get lower speed limits. Why was that decision made?
Generally speaking, one of the biggest risks we have on our roads is people going way too fast. That's really changed. It's one of the many things that changed during COVID is for a while there was nobody on the streets, so it was really kind of Mad Max out there. And I don't think anybody has really adjusted to the fact that we're back to normal traffic patterns. But when we slow down the speeds, we can save lives.
40 to 35 on South Alvernon Way, pretty much right outside our studio here, from East Broadway to East Concord. What are some of the other streets that we should know about?
I don't have a list in front of me.
But
so
are there quite a few?
There's a dozen or so different streets that are having those adjustments. And Actually, it's not that unusual for this to happen. Probably about 2 to 3 times a year, we'll have some speed limit adjustments.
Okay, man and women power. I know that the fire chief, who's always quite transparent, he's always a good guest on our show. He's scheduled to be here next Friday, Chuck Ryan. We'll hear from him. And the last time he was on the show a few months ago, he said full staffing, which is great, at Tucson Fire. How are we doing with the police?
We are still fully staffed at fire. With police, we're staffed better than we have been in a long time. We have a little over 800 commissioned officers on staff. Those are the folks that are fully sworn. And we've built up a cadre of about 150 community service officers or professional staff investigators. And I just want to pause there for a moment. Traditional policing, everybody was commissioned, and so you had everybody that was doing police work was commissioned. And so some people will throw out a number of, you need this many sworn officers. The way TPD runs in a modern policing world under Chief Kazmar is we're putting the right work in the right hands. So you do need a significant number of sworn officers, and for the first time in several years, that number has not gone down, not because of budget cuts, but because of people being willing to retain and recruit into that industry. But the other 150 that adds to that are folks that can do some of the police work, or they can monitor a scene after the policing's been done. The CSOs can do a lot of work, and they're very visible in the community. And the professional staff investigators is being piloted by Tucson Police Department. There are a lot of folks that are interested in being detectives that don't want to first be a cop.
Uh-huh.
And you can have an investigative mind. You can have a skill set provided to you, but not need to carry a badge and a gun.
Interesting.
And so we've recruited our first class. They're actually out in the field now. And we can actually get a more diverse candidate interested in that role than we can for being
somebody coming up
officer
through the ranks.
That's correct.
All right, Kurt, it's your turn.
Yeah, so that's a quite a big change in terms of like the philosophy of policing. Have there been any downsides or challenges to making that change?
The challenges have been, how do you incorporate a different way of doing business into something that's very traditional? You know, policing can be very traditional. When a fully sworn police officer shows up to a scene, they know their role. They know how to contribute. They know how to be safe. When you have civilians into the mix, it's just how do we equip them, and how do we have the officers know what they can and cannot expect from a CSO who comes in relief, or a PSI that comes in relief. The teams have been fantastic, and it's actually the people in the field that make that happen. So we're still especially since the newness of the PSI, how do we make them more effective? And TPD's been doing that really well. We've not, to my knowledge, had any negative outcomes of having a CSO or a PSI, and we should have had a sworn police officer.
Mm-hmm. You kind of, because part of the reason that police carry guns is it can be dangerous, right? So you're keeping these other group away from the dangerous situations.
They get into some, you know, touchy situations, but not to the same degree of danger of trying to effect an arrest or do a pursuit. Although they have some training in those areas, they're not armed. They're armed with lethal force, but they do take a challenging stance as well. They interact with a lot of folks who might not be happy with the city or with somebody else, but they're trained and equipped to do well.
All right, climate change. What's the most important thing we should know about the city and climate change? And I know there was an 18-page report on the whole thing, but what's the bottom line?
Bottom line for climate in Tucson is we need to address our ability to withstand a hotter environment. That sounds obvious, but what it really means is that while there's going to be mitigation actions taken to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and contribute toward the height of the warming that's going to occur. We know warming has already occurred. It's going to continue to occur regardless of what we do now. So we have to adapt to that and make sure that our workers are protected, that there's great education and resources available to people so that they don't succumb to heat-related illness. We've always had that. It's always been a desert. It's always been a hot place. But it's going beyond that. And we have to make sure people have adequate resources To protect themselves.
How about TEP and the eventually the city taking over the role of that utility? Is that that's not going anywhere? That talk, is it?
There is a study that's just launching to look at the energy sourcing for Tucson. That study includes about four or five different ways that the city, the energy supplied to the city of Tucson community, can be decarbonized. One way would be the city takes over the utility. That's an extremely expensive way. I'm not saying it's infeasible, but it is. It's just one of the options being looked at. We are also working with TEP to say, how do we, you are still TEP, but how do you decarbonize our energy and how do we participate? And there's also community choice energy. There's microgrids. There's a lot of different ways that we can move down the path toward decarbonization. But we are doing that study, and it's starting very soon, including the potential for publicitation, if that's the word. We always talk about privatization. This is the municipalizing the energy source.
We are at end of our segment three. And just one quick thing about staffing. I mentioned you've got 4,500 employees. Lots of vacancies still in certain departments?
It's true. IT has some significant vacancies. Mm-hmm. Our vacancy rates come down in the last 2 to 3 months. A lot of efforts going into that. But certainly police is one where we've always got our eye on it. IT it's challenging to get those professionals. And there's some of the technical trades. It's really difficult to retain plumbers and electricians.
Okay. And jobs are listed at what, on your website?
Find our website and you can find a job.
All right. Tim Tomier, thanks and congratulations on your promotion.
Thank you so much.
Kurt, thank you very much. We'll look for you, the work that you and Caitlin do at Tucson Agenda.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. All right. We've got Weekend Watch with Dan Gibson coming up right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
All right, let's do it. It's time for the weekend presented Weekend Watch, presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, where we like to say, and there is truth here. It's about 10 degrees, 10 to 15 degrees cooler in Silver City, the 87 degrees midday high, and we're going to go up to a little over 100, maybe 100, 101. So it's cooler over there because of their elevation, and worth the trip for sure, a three-hour drive east of Tucson with a ton of outdoor activities and some great indoor activities as well. In historic Silver City. Their website is southwestnewmexico.org. Dan Gibson is the host of Weekend Watch, and we welcome him at this time back to the program. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm good. I want to point out that I had my alarm set for last week, too. Although that was the best of, I was prepared to go
for
a show that wasn't actually happening.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I dropped the ball on that one. I should have notified
you. No,
you
didn't do anything wrong. I just want to tell you, I was on top of it.
There you go. You certainly are. Thank you so much. What's going on?
On top of it. The people at XO Roast are making a great connection between delicious beverages and food and connecting it to the terroir of Tucson. They have an event today from 6 to 9 p.m. called Rewilding Taste Buds in Neighborhoods. It's an evening at their 196 West Simpson Street location that's celebrating a new cookbook from Desert Harvesters. So there'll be food from Desert Harvesters, from Mission Garden, Ishkashita, the refugee organization, that'll tell you about all the bounty of the Sonoran Desert. You can learn about the fruits of the desert, learn how to harvest things, or just, you know, taste some stuff and have a good time. And that's absolutely free, other than buying drinks and food.
Sounds like a winner.
Yeah, totally. I think so. On a totally different note, tomorrow from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., the Tucson Hop Shop at the Metal Arts Village at 3230 North Dodge is having their Summer Queer Bazaar. It is an evening of outreach, shopping, local art. 35 local artists and vendors representing the LGBTQIA+ art scene of Tucson, plus drinks from Tucson Hop Shop, food from Chowdown Pizza and Herculean Chicken, which, by the way, Herculean Chicken, their Taiwanese fried chicken, spectacular, so worth it on its own. And DJ, you know, so there'll be music as well. What more could you ask for?
Good food and music is pretty hard to beat.
Truly, and you could go to Moe's first, the beloved Buckmaster sponsor Moe's, then cross the street, go to the market. You can make a date of it.
There you go.
Tomorrow night, it's too much going on tomorrow night, but enjoy it while the weather holds up. It is the celebration of 6 years of the MSA Annex, the Mercado San Agustin Annex at 267 South Avenida de Convento. They'll be celebrating some of the original vendors there, Westbound, Butte, and Why I Love Where I Live. That'll be from 7 to 9 p.m. Food and drink specials, live in, music from Golden Boots, toasts, because the people of Westbound love toasts, and also cupcakes. I have no idea whether these cupcakes are free or not, but there will be cupcakes.
Did you say something about Wyla Music?
Why I Love Where I Live. I love Wyla Music. I don't think that's involved, though.
Okay, go ahead.
But I will make a note. For the next time there's a Wyla event, it will be featured.
Thank you very much.
And we can watch.
Go ahead.
All right, so the Reveille Men's Chorus is having their show this weekend. They will be celebrating the 30th anniversary of the Australian hit movie. Hit might be generous there, but it's a beloved favorite of mine, The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and former American Idol contestant and local chanteuse Crystal Stark will be joining them. There'll be shows Saturday, this Saturday at 7:30 p.m., and then Sunday at 2 p.m. The tickets, you can get them at the door for $30. It's cheaper for young people, including if you're under 12. The show is free, and that'll be at the Temple of Music and Art.
All righty. I think we'll leave it right there. Dan Gibson, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, the Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. I want to thank everybody here at KVOI and Bustos Media, making us feel so very welcome here at the Buckmaster Show. The original theme music for our program, composed by my German friend, Christophan. Thanks to my assistant, Rosemary Brandt. Rose makes sure all of our podcasts are up at the website, buckmastershow.com, in a timely manner. And, of course, engineer, producer Tom Fairbanks and the entire team here wishing us and everybody well. Have a great weekend, everyone.